Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to batten down the hatches and splice the main brace. It's the all-new Panic Room Radio Show blog. Glenn Miller and the Boys. Played it before, and I'll probably play it again. One of my favourites. And a very good evening to our listener. It's Thursday evening. It's 9:30 something or other. Episode 26 of the brand new Panic Room. Wow, that's sort of half a year worth of episodes. So scary stuff. Brand new year. Happy New Year to you, listener. Hope you're doing well. So we got a longer show. We've extended it to, despite popular demand, we've extended it to an hour and a half, which gives us more time for faff, really, and banter and messing around. So, anywho, it's a brand new year, 2017. I never thought I'd live this long. So every day is a bonus for me. And speaking of Every day's a bonus. Oh, here she is, Xtina. How are you, my dear?
I'm great now that I'm drinking.
Good. There you go. Excellent. You wouldn't be you without the drink.
No,
which is great. Did you have a good? I know it seems like a lifetime ago. Did you have a good holiday? We're gonna call it holidays now. Can't say Christmas because it offends people. But you know, Christmas. Did you have a good one?
It doesn't offend me, so.
Oh, good. If it did, I really couldn't care less, to be honest. You had a good one?
I had a good one. It was quiet, so that's definitely a plus these days with kids and stuff. So, no, it was nice. It was quiet, and my son is, you know, he got everything he wanted, and he got a video game console thing, and he's been busy playing that. So, you know, my Christmas was made, you know, because he's out of my... Go play
that's
your video game.
go play in your room. There you go. Well, my boy, he's 14 now. I mean, he's been in PlayStation for a good few years. And, he pretty much gives us a list. Here you go. So we've got all the games. In fact, that reminds me, actually, got a game that was out on... Yeah, it was like a pre-order. It was actually out, and it should be here by now. It's out on the 29th of December, so I'm going to chase that. Bad marketing. Bad marketing from the makers of Dead Island 2 for having something that came out after Christmas. Duh. But hey, you know, we bought it. So. But anyway, we had a little bit of sad news. Literally the Monday before Christmas, the first day of the kids' Christmas vacation, and our beloved Greyhound died. Bless him.
Yeah.
I mean, he was about 14, 15. I mean, he was ancient. And as a consequence, we now have a new greyhound who is a rescue. And he's actually an ex-racing dog that never raced. He's about 3 years old. He's an absolute sweetheart, bless him. He lived on a farm and then he went to live in the foster home. He didn't know what the couch was, let alone get. We had to teach him how to get on the couch. Never eaten human food. Never been upstairs because we kids want an upstairs dog like the other one. And he'd never been. He'd looked at the stairs like, "What's that then?" So the kids were trying to name him. Let's call him Rain Man. Fuck's sake! He's finding his way around now. Bless him, but he's
you
really
could call him Forrest, though. That would have been cute, Forrest.
It's funny. The kids actually did a little poll between them and came out with Bailey. So he's now called Bailey, which is kind of suits him. Forrest would have been good, or like I say, Rain Man would have been perfect, but they were having none of it.
Definitely better than Fifi, though. So, you know.
Hey, don't you knock Fifi? Fifi is awesome. Fifi is trained. He will tear you. You break into my house, he will tear your throat out. He's a trained attack dog, but
he doesn't look like a Fifi. So, I was expecting this cute little ankle biter or something, and your Fifi is nothing like that. So
he is not. Well, he's 120 pounds Mastiff mix, and he's just this big.
Wow.
He's a sweetheart. He's great with the kids, great house dog, brilliant guarder. So we had him trained by a guy who trains service dogs, so he's properly trained and everything. But he's my daughter can still ride him. She can actually sit on his back and ride him like a little horsey. So, you know, but he just puts up with it. He's not, you know, he's happy with that. So bless him. But just called him Fifi, and it kind of his actual name's Theo, but Fifi sort of stuck.
That's
so
you still have
your little
time.
Chihuahuas then, I presume.
Yeah, I still have the little yabby.
Sorry, I am sorry about that. Yeah. Hopefully they'll die soon.
Hey, I love my dog.
Anyway, we digress. We've got one hell of a show this evening, have we, or have we not? Yes, we have.
We always do. Yes, we do.
You've surpassed yourself. We have P. Matten and we have Bonnie Katz on the show tonight. Two awesome authoresses. I'm looking forward to meeting both of them, especially P, or Patricia, as I can call her. And I shall explain why when she's on the air, okay? Need to, a couple of shout-outs, actually, before we start. One to my dear friend Nick Grabowski from Black Bedsheet Books, who called me just before the show, actually. I had a good natter for, been a while since we had a natter. So, hi, Nick. Hopefully, he said he'd try and listen in. If you're listening, Nick, how you doing? Mitch Workman will be listening, hopefully. Shelby, Melissa... Who else is going to be listening? Is that it? No, our listener?
Denise. Maybe Denise will be listening. Hi, Denise.
Denise,
if you are.
I don't know who you are, Denise, but thank you for listening and whatnot. Yeah, and obviously, yeah. So I think that's probably all our listeners for this week, isn't it? Is that it? Not really. Not really. At least another two.
Hmm? Yeah,
yeah. At least another two. So, hey, what?
Hey, what? Am I missing something?
I thought you were going to say something profound and intelligent there, but you were just sipping
me?
On your wine instead.
Yeah,
I know. I'm not usually that naive, to be honest with you, but tell you what we are going to do. First one of the new year, because in about 2 weeks' time, this guy is going to be...
Grab him by the pussy.
Well done for everyone who elected that guy.
Oh, God. I want one of those bumper stickers that say, I voted for the other guy. I really do.
I voted for anyone. There's flying spaghetti monster, but just not that idiot. But anywho. So, and hopefully, AT&T willing, and they did come and fiddle with my wires a week or so back, which was always fun. You know, it's company for me. Hopefully we have Patricia on the line. Are we there?
Yes, and you can
Yay!
Yes,
oh, sorry,
I'm so thrilled to be on the show. Oh, my God, I've waited, like, forever.
I'm sorry. Did the next Stephen not say that?
I wasn't that famous. I wanted to be on since I heard Kendra Satter on.
Oh, I know. I love having her on. I do. She's been on twice now, and I think I have her scheduled again coming up. I love Kendra. She's awesome.
We had some great guests, obviously. And now we have yourself, P. And I'm not going to call you P. I'm sorry. Can I call you Patricia?
You can call me P.
P. Okay, fine. I have to say thank you so much for sending me the Mars bars.
Oh my gosh, they got there?
Yes, they did. And you obviously heard a while ago lamenting that you just can't get Mars bars over here. And dear listener, bless her, P, got them from, I'm thinking, looks like they're from England, and shipped them out.
Yes,
they came today.
I couldn't get them. I couldn't get them.
Exactly. You cannot get them, and they are one of the best. And for, obviously, people who don't know, they are, the closest you have here is like the Milky Way, the caramel Milky Way. To be fair,
we
not even close.
We don't have anything close. Let me tell you something. We have so many preservatives, bad sugars and additives in our candy, that the only really good candy is overseas now, for real.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, Hershey's is not real chocolate. I'm sorry, guys. It is not real chocolate. You compare Hershey's with dairy milk, with any Cadbury's dairy milk, whatever. That's proper chocolate. Hershey's, I don't know what it is. It's just horrible. I don't cannot eat that stuff. It's horrible.
They're trying to kill us all.
They're killing you guys with chocolate. Anyway, look, here's what's going to happen, okay? This is. Can you hear that? Okay? I'm going to eat this. You guys talk amongst yourselves. Your next team talk amongst yourselves. I am going to eat this Mars bar live on air, okay? So you guys just chat. And I'm seriously... I'm going to eat it myself.
Oh, my God.
That
was my fantasy. It's food porn. Wow. Yay!
It's the first one I've had in 6.5 years.
Bar before. What is it? What is in it? Because I swear I know of this candy bar, but if you can only get it over there, what am I thinking of?
Don't ask me questions. I'm eating.
It's got like nougat, right? Caramel and chocolate, but the American one is nothing like the.
No.
Is that it? Okay.
Oh God, that is so so.
Oh
my
God. My
French. That is so fucking good.
I hope you have a food gasm.
I have just come.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. I need another drink now.
Ask her some questions. I'm happy. I'm just eating now.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy.
No, thank you so much. Tell us about the book while I eat. Just off you go.
You mean the most recent one or like books I've written?
Yeah, well, the most recent, the one, yeah. Mm.
The one I'm going to read from. Okay. Vampire Orphanage is, it's sort of the Bloody Brady Bunch. It's not humor, it's pretty dark, but it's about a couple, an infertile couple named Tom and Marley Patterson. And Marley is a dancer and Tom is a human, which was an adjustment in their marriage. And then they found out they were infertile. Who knew? They couldn't have kids. So they went out, they decided it was Marley's idea to adopt abandoned vampire children. You know, so they collected a baker's dozen, and that's where the book kind of starts.
Interesting. I have to say the tagline for the book was, and you thought your children were a pain in the neck. And the funny thing is that I had read that like 3 different times, and I didn't totally get the pain in the neck part. I hate admitting that. But today I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, I get it, because it's a vampire. So, you know, that was my blonde moment for the last day and a half. So.
Oh, that's funny.
Maybe we should call you Forrest instead then. Or Rain Man.
I have been called Penny a lot from Big Bang Theory. I get Penny way more often than I'm ever going to admit to. So, but that's okay with me because she's hot. So I'm okay with that.
Hey, you do you really well. You're like the thinking man's floozy.
Yes. I'm okay with that.
Fun.
I am.
I know you're good. But it's got one of my favorite quotes from Vampire Orphanage, and it's something Marley says. She's like the mother figure. She says, "The soul of a betrayed child holds the greatest darkness." And I think that kind of sets part of the tone for the book, because there is a lot of, these children come with baggage and with, complicated tasks. And some of their tasks catch up with them, and then there's conflict and danger and mystery, and you're not sure who you're dealing with. And in the meantime, they're trying to have pretty much a normal family life, except they have a lot of little fang bangers running around. So it's a very lively read.
I'm a little bit
depressed now because my Mars bar's gone. So I might actually go grab one of the others from the fridge as well. Because there's a little tip for anybody
Yay,
who gets one.
Good for you. Keep it going.
You have to eat chocolate out. You've got to refrigerate it. Chocolate from especially Mars bars. When I was a kid, we used to freeze them and then slice them. And eat them sort of like, that is just,
chocolate.
Wow. Chocolate. I'm a big chocolate file. So, anywho, we're not here to talk about chocolate.
I was wondering about the vampire children. Now, is it like normal vampires that they'll never get any older? And how is that for them mentally? I mean, do they stay the age that they are when they return?
No, they actually don't, because I've written a whole series called Full Moon Series, and my readers are really familiar with all. I'm working on the sixth book now. And one of the neat things, because we get to, I had the privilege, and writers have the privilege, you guys are writers, so you know, of world building, okay? So you don't really have to stick to all the hard and fast, you know, things that you know about the earliest vampires. And so these, in my novels, vampires, when they're children, they do age, and they age, but they age more rapidly. Like every year is like a couple, 3 years. So they're growing up. The youngest, as the novel starts, the youngest are Sadie Bell and Theo when they're about 3 to 4 years old. And then they range all the way up to the teenagers that are like of age, you know, almost 18. And, yeah. So that's the way it works. They don't stay that age forever, you know.
Right.
I'm not Anne Rice. So I didn't keep the kids the same age forever, because I think it's more interesting if they're growing and evolving as they're trying to fit into the normal society.
Because
they go to school and stuff. So it was a challenge to write, but it works. Somehow, you know how that goes when you're writing. And yeah, I'm so excited about it. Lots of people are excited about it. I had originally intended to release it as a serial read, you know. So I released the first 30 pages, self-published on Amazon, and it was picked up by a publisher. Telltale Publishing offered me a 3-book contract. They took Forest of Bleeding Trees, which is like over 600 pages, and that'll be 2 books. And then they kind of vetted me and saw Vampire Orphanage. So before, I mean, I had only written 30 pages, okay? And then I had a contract, and I just finished an hour ago.
Yay,
wow.
Well done.
I'm so excited. It's such an exciting day. So, yeah, I'm really excited.
I will drink to that.
To be fair, Xtrini will drink to anything, to be honest. But, no, that is fantastic. No, well done. That is a monumental occasion. Thank you for sharing that occasion with us.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. It's so exciting that it happened today, because I thought, I can go on the show and say that it's finished now, but of course it's a rough cut, but still I really wrote my little hiney off, you know, to finish this in time, because I was on a deadline, and I really wanted to, you know, show that they made a good investment, you know.
Brilliant. No, that's great. So when will it hit the shelves?
I think it's going to be February. That's what I'm guessing, because, you know, it goes through a process, and they have to make sure it's, you know, edited with a fine-tooth comb, and it'll be in paperback, and it'll be on shelves, and you know, it'll be very exciting, very exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so do you have a reading for us, Patricia?
I sure do.
So P, you've got to call a P. If I have to call a P, you've got to call a P as well.
Yeah, you can
actually
call me P.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, call
yes, ma'am.
Okay, this is from chapter 11, and the chapter title is Gunner. Gunner had prepared himself to see bodies, but there were none. Instead, the open downstairs area was awash with blood. It stood in small congealing pools here and there, flashes of it nearly dried against the walls that Gunner's mother had so patiently wallpapered. The glass front to the china cabinet was shattered. Jagged shark tooth remains of it lodged in the wooden edges of the cabinet doors. Gunner saw that his father's shotgun was still hanging over the fireplace, and without thinking, he ran over and pulled it down from its moorings. He knew his father kept it loaded at all times, just in case. Whatever had happened there, it happened so quickly that his survival-minded father had no time to react. Something crunched under his boot, and he picked his foot up to see his father's wire-rimmed glasses lying in a mangled heap, both lenses crushed. Something else caught his attention, and he squatted down to get a better look. Underneath fragments of the lenses, something looked back at him. It was a human eye, just the eyeball, staring sightlessly upwards, and the iris was brown, his father's eye. Gunnar turned his head to the side, willing himself not to pass out as the room swayed crazily, and the antique clock on the mantelpiece, somehow spared from the violence, ticked along maddeningly, as though nothing had happened. Gunnar shook his head and it cleared. He knew he must get his sister out and leave the cabin before what had ever broken in returned. He glanced over at the door. He could see that the wooden plank placed across the door had been split across the middle as the intruders forced their way in. Impossible was the first thought that came to mind, but he had no time to wrap his head around it. There was his little sister to consider. He turned and climbed quickly up the ladder, told Emily to come out, and told her that she must fill her backpack with clothes and toys because they had to leave. "Where are Mama and Papa?" she asked, fear in her childlike voice. "I don't know," he told her honestly, "but it's not safe anymore, Em. We have to leave, so just do what I said, please." Silently, they both stuffed things in the backpacks. Gunnar was glad the cabin lacked a cellar because his mom kept extra canned goods up in the loft. When they were both ready, he knelt down to give her a hug. "Okay, Fuss Budget, listen up. I'm going down the ladder ahead of you. When we get to the bottom, turn around. We're going to play a game. I will tie my bandana around your eyes, and you have to take my hand and not peek until I say. Ready?" Although Emily, only 4 years old, had a look of confusion in her eyes that Gunnar felt heart-wrenching, she was a tanner after all, and she squared her small shoulders and said, "Yes, Gunnar," nodding her head. Gunnar went down before her, not even tempted to twist around and view the chaotic scene below them. He'd had all he could take, and why bother? He was only 11 years old, after all, and there was nothing he could do about any of it. When they reached the bottom, Gunnar tied his bandana so that it covered Emily's eyes down to her chin. "Too tight?" he asked. "No, it's fine," she added, adding, "Thank you," unexpectedly. Tears sprang into his eyes, blurring his vision. "She knows it's bad," he thought. "Somehow she knows." "Okay," he told her, relieved that his voice sounded even and normal. "Just take my hand and stick close." Gunnar tried to avoid the pools of blood as he traversed the darkly stained oak floorboards that his parents had laid down so lovingly. At one point, they had to step on some glass that had seemingly blown out from a decorative mirror beside the front door. "Ew! What is that, Gunnar?" Emily asked him. She was holding tightly to his hand with both of her own small ones. "Nothing, Pipsqueak," he told her. "Almost out now." The heavy door to the cabin creaked open loudly, as though complaining of the harsh treatment it had received the night before. It had snowed, just a light dusting of about half an inch or so. Still, it was enough so that the vermilion-colored blood trail that showed almost fuchsia along the edges where it had been diluted several shades lighter by the melting snow was clearly visible. "Keep the blindfold on just a bit longer," he told Emily. As he moved down the path, he noted that the blood trails ended abruptly. The rest of the path and the wide expanse of yard in front of the barn were pristine and undisturbed. He decided to walk Emily to the barn before taking off her blindfold. The rise of the hill going up to the cabin would obscure the bloody trails, and then they could keep going through the woods using them as cover. But where to go? He decided to go in the direction of his grandfather's farm rather than into town. It was a long way to town to fetch the constable, and his grandfather could get them there faster. He figured it was a 5-mile walk, tops. Inwardly, he cursed his father and his mother. Living off the grid had been his parents' dream, not his. People with cockamamie ideas about living the way their forefathers lived would be better off renting a time machine instead of forcing their kids to join them in living a less sanitary, boring, and certainly less convenient life. And what had it brought them? Well, he wouldn't think about that until after they got to Grandpa's. There was a pond up ahead, and it had started snowing again. Emily crowed when she saw a bright red fox dart across their path, followed by two fat squirrels and then a deer. Gunner had never seen so many species of animal up that close before. They were practically running over the toes of his boots, seemingly oblivious to his proximity. What were they running to, he wondered, but the question was hardly formed when another, more insistent thought overshadowed it. What were they running from? He didn't have long to wonder. Gunner became aware of an ominously dark shadow hovering above them. Instinctively, he pulled Emily closer and zipped her up in his coat. That would be the last thing he did before he felt something hit him between the apex of his shoulder and neck, and a searing pain as he was lifted upward, and he felt Emily fall from beneath his coat, tumbling with arms and legs akimbo towards the edge of the half-frozen pond. Ew, something's gonna happen.
Exciting. Sorry, I was just trying to build up a bit of attention there. Beautifully read as well, P. That was awesome.
One of the kids' backstories.
I like that.
Yeah.
I did. Oh, my goodness. I've always had a thing for vampires. I really have. I always want to know what is your favorite, vampire,
person.
Buffy, Twilight, what do you like?
Trope.
P.
I like Anne Rice. Anne Rice is my favorite. And the only reason I started writing about vampires at all, and I do write straight up horror and other things, thrillers and so forth, but she actually inspired me to start writing about vampires because this is a weird story. Do you have a minute? Because I have a disabled adult son, and I was rereading Interview with Vampire, and I looked at Jeffrey, and I thought, what would happen if Jeffrey got bitten by a vampire? Would he be, normal or maybe even super able? And that started Full Moon Series, which is going to be published by Fantasy Publishing soon, all 5 books, and I'm really thrilled. They just signed the contract, so.
I've got to ask. Is there any other genres that you want to write? You want to explore? You've got a hankering to go for, or are you going to stick with vampires?
Oh, I do vampires. I did Destroying the House. Actually, last year, I did Forest of Bleeding Trees, which has all types of creatures. You're a zoologist, James, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am, yeah.
Yeah. So it has all types of creatures and supernatural takes on creatures. So that's Forest of Bleeding Trees, and that takes place in the mysterious mountains and bogs of West Virginia. So that's a little bit different. It's not really vampires. Handsome Devil's Modeling Club is one that I am not completely finished. I originally wrote it as a novella for a collection, and that has to do with fallen angels coming to Earth.
Oh, cool.
And Dryden's House is one that I'm really psyched about because it's based, well, it was inspired. I can't say based. That's not... I don't want to be sued. It was inspired by a real haunted facility that I worked in for over 7 years. And I also went on to give the novel authenticity. I also went on with a paranormal investigative group led by my close friend Raven Wolf too. It's called INOPS, Indiana Network of Paranormal Studies, and we investigated a house that was almost 200 years old in Anderson, Indiana, and it was creepy. It had creepy stuff in it. It had a room where you walk into it, and you would feel like after about 5 seconds, you'd feel like you were covered with spider webs. Seriously.
Oh, wow. I would love to do that. Yeah.
Oh, me
and
too,
I am such a chicken.
Yeah.
So did you last the whole night? Did you manage the whole night there, or were you just there for a bit till you ran out?
Well, yeah, but I stuck to my friend like I was Velcro to her backside. You know,
awesome.
She's like this really short woman, and I was like scared and clinging to her. But it was, you know, you could go in the house, and there was this converted barn. This barn that had been converted to a garage, and it had like bay windows, and you could see someone walking back and forth, and there was nobody out there.
Oh, wow. I love that. I would love to spend some time in a place like that. Yeah.
Oh, I know. I bet you'd love it. But it was, and there was a graveyard in the back. You know, so many older homes, right? They buried people.
Mm-hmm.
There were gravestones and graveyard,
oh,
and that place had a history and a half.
Yeah, I want to go.
Oh gosh,
I would love that.
I would have been terrified, but because I think I'm like an adrenaline junkie. I love to be scared, but at the same time, I'm so terrified. I mean, I actually have wondered before, can somebody die of fright? Because I just get that scared.
Well,
but
technically, yeah. I mean, you can, your heart could give out, you know? I mean, so I guess it could happen. Yeah, so probably best, best you don't go there.
I know. Well, I think that's why we love horror. We really love it because fear is the strongest emotion. You know?
Yes.
Grossness, a lot of people mistake horror for gross stuff, but that's not horror. Horror is skillful and it's manipulative, and it fuels our greatest human emotion, which is fear.
Yeah.
And some of the most horrific movies, horrific books are those that get into you. Like you say, it's not always the gore, it's the ones that get into your head. They stick in your head and just, you know, it can just be just, you know, some of the detail, just some of the stuff. Certainly for me, I mean, I like to write about creatures and demons and monsters and whatnot, but some of the most scary things is, you know, sort of what your average everyday people get up to. I mean, your serial killers, you know, the number of serial killers, but they catch them and their friends and neighbors. You know, he was the nicest person. He was a good neighbor. And these people killing, you know, but that's really what scares me, because you just don't know, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you just don't. You know, people can flip on a dime. And by the way, congratulations on winning your award as best director at Splatterfest, James.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that old thing, you know. Thank you.
Because I was like, that made me like 20 times more nervous to be on the show when I read your accomplishments. I was like, I was like, oh, my God. And a screenwriter, too. That is way cool.
Well, there you go. If you want to see the award-winning film, it's on my website, jameslongmore.com. There's all my short films on there.
I just ordered your novel, Peed. Peed? Is it Petty or Peed?
Peed, centipede, right?
As in centipede, yeah.
Yeah, because I love the premise. I love the premise. And, of course, anything with you know, more than two legs is, like, ultra creepy anyway.
They have far too many legs. Far too many legs, those things.
Oh, I know.
I always wanted to write a creature. I mean, the first adult horror book I ever read was called The Rats by a British author called James Herbert. And I actually have an original copy here now. And I always wanted to write a creature, because I love creature movies and creature books. But I never sort of, you know, trying to find a creature that hadn't been done to death. And funnily enough, you say, I mean, yeah, I have a degree in zoology, so I studied zoology. Always had a love of animals. And the only animal on the face of this earth that really freaks me out is the centipede. And the fact that these things, I mean, no word of a lie, they get to over 12 inches long, and they have a shitload of legs, and they can bite and they can hurt. And they, it's funny enough, it wasn't until we moved to Texas, and it wasn't until we've been here about 6 months, and my son was in the Boy Scouts, and they get these like these mini beast presenters, and he brought spiders, and he brought a big centipede. It was probably about 7 or 8 inches long. The Texas giant size, and nobody told me there was a Texas giant centipede. Otherwise, we'd have moved to Alaska when we moved here. And this, honestly, no one. And I'm in the backyard, you know, if I've got to move a brick or something, I'm sort of gingerly. One day there's going to be. They have infestations of them. That would be my worst nightmare, to have a house infestation of those. I mean, they're just.
Do they even bite or anything? What do they? Do
they bite.
Do?
They are.
They really
are venomous.
They bite.
The big one, the Vietnamese yellow-legged centipede. I mean, it won't. I think there's only been one documented death, which was a child in Peru who was bitten on the head. But they will give you. It's like a mild rattlesnake bite. It's one of those things. I mean, it's like they say, well, if you're allergic to the venom. But then again, you could say the same about peanuts, for God's sake. If you're allergic to peanuts, you could die. But they will give you a nasty bite. It has necrotizing enzymes and nerve poison. I mean, there's a whole concoction. Again, I did my research for the book. You know, there's a whole concoction of poisons in the venom. And they will certainly spoil your afternoon. They will put you in hospital. They are to be avoided.
People
buy them as pets. People have some of these bloody things as pets. Don't.
People have spiders.
People buy
everything
as pets.
I have handled tarantulas.
Right?
We have snakes. I mean, not far from where I'm sitting now, upstairs, we have a 12-foot Burmese python. Snakes, but I really don't mind. But those centipedes, just I don't like them. I don't like them at all. So thank you for bringing that up. But having said that, you know, because I mean that's why
I
mean. For me, that's what I mean. Pete is so far probably my favorite book that I've written, because it taps into my own personal fear. And the heroine of the book, actually, she's a zoology professor who has a secret fear of these things. So he sort of taps into that, the fact that they really do give me the creep. And we've got a couple of scenes, and one of the scenes is the guy trapped in an elevator that gets stuck in an old hotel, and suddenly all these literally thousands of these things just dropping through the elevator ceiling, and slowly sort of fill up the elevator, filling it up. And it's a great scene. You'll love it. You must.
I'm reading it. I'm
going to
read it.
Oh, you should. Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Right.
I want to talk about Fluffy Kittens next.
Yeah. I was going to say, we are running out of time for this first segment. You know, we make sure that we bumped up the, you know, to an hour and a half, and we're still running out of time. But I wanted to thank you very much, P, for coming on the show. And as I want to ask you, because I always put everyone on the spot, if you'll come back and see us.
I would love to. And
awesome.
I'd like to say,
awesome.
Be looking on Amazon for Claiming My Valentine anthology, and also there's another one coming out called Beautiful Nightmares from CHBB. That's an anthology of horror by women.
Awesome.
And do you have a website, P, that you want to give a mention to?
I'm on. It's www.facebook.com/Patricia.net. Is that a period? I can't see anymore. Period 3. Patricia Net is like my flagship page, and then I also have a 16K follower book page called Full Moon Series, which is like my flagship vampire series.
Awesome.
It's going to be published by Vamp to See, CHBB. And You know, thank you so much. I am absolutely thrilled and honored to meet both of you. Everybody pick up a copy of Dark Musings by Tina Marie. It's excellent. I already have a favorite. Dark Poem. It will rock your little dark soul. That's all I can say. It's very sensual. She doesn't hold back. I'll say that. And that's the best kind of horror, when nobody holds back.
Yay.
Awesome.
I'm so
and thank
you.
You.
And I would definitely
thank you again
you
for the
Facebook.
Mars bars. Thank you for the Mars bars.
I'm so honored. You guys take care. Mwah.
Okay. Thank you for joining us. Okay. Bye bye.
Bye.
Awesome. Right. Quick couple of commercial notifications, and then we'll have a song because I really need a wee now. So.
A brand new press specializing in horror, bizarro, dark erotica, erotic horror, and dark poetry, Hellbound Books Publishing wants your best stories. Now open for novels, short story collections, and anthology submissions. Please pay no mind to the sulfur smell. Go to hellboundbookspublishing.com to learn more. In the mood for something steamy to read this winter, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. And you can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media, our Facebook page, unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com. I'm getting faster every week at that.
And you can breathe now. I mean, we have a little more time. You can breathe between sentences if you want.
I'll remember that for next week.
No, that was great. Thank you. And okay. So we're going to have a bit of a tune, and then we are going to be back with our second guest, who is Bonnie Capps, erotic horror. I'm very much looking forward to talking to her. You're going to open another bottle of wine, more than likely, and I'm going to go for a week. So we shall see you after this. From the Marcells, I believe it was. It's funny, I was listening to that whilst I was listening to us on the toilet, to be honest. It always reminds me of the awesome, my second favourite werewolf film ever, American Werewolf in London. Great, great movie. And a great song as well. I've heard many versions, but I think that's probably one of the originals. So, yeah, I enjoyed that. So I think Xtina, did you survive the song?
I did. And you just mentioned Werewolf in London, and I loved the song. I did.
Sorry, I just...
It is time for more wine, so...
It's always time for more wine. Yeah, it's funny enough. Obviously, I know you're a vampire person, and I do like the vampire genre, but I guess at heart I'm a werewolf guy, you know? Part of me would love them to remake it, but part of me doesn't, because I think they would just spoil, like they did with The Thing. I think in Poltergeist, and I could reel off a lot more. They would just spoil.
Awful.
But I think
that
the Howling remade by Rob Zombie might just do it. That I would watch. hey, I don't know if I mentioned this last week. Did I recommend The Autopsy of Jane Doe last week?
You did.
I did.
Yeah.
Listener, if you haven't seen it, it's on iTunes. It's on, I think it's on Netflix now. Watch it. It is a great old style. You know, we mentioned with P earlier, you know, about the psychological bit. I mean, it has a couple of gory bits, but as a psychological horror, as a very claustrophobic, brilliant, incredibly well done. Great, great movie. So watch it.
Instead of
your Marvel superhero nonsense.
Speaking of horror, I've been watching the Scream movies with my son. He's not a huge horror fan. So, you know, this is as scary as he'll allow me to watch with him. So, I've been enjoying them. They're not bad movies. They're not. I kind of enjoyed them.
Do you know, I absolutely hate horror comedy horror,
well,
whatever.
You know,
they always
Scream
don't...
wasn't as horror. It's not like Scary Movie. That was silly. That was ridiculous. But Scream wasn't too bad, I didn't think. I mean, you know, it's not like a total spoof anyway. You know, it's not like Scary Movie.
I'm racking my brain trying to think of a good, I guess, comedy horror that you would call. I mean, some are sort of inadvertent. Some have some very dark humor. But the ones that are just out now, trying to play it for comedy, it just doesn't work for me. I mean, horror's not meant to be funny. I mean, everything I write, there's a grain. I mean, you've read Colton Forshay, you know, there's a grain of dark humor. But when you're trying to put gags in and wisecracking, you just, don't do that.
Zombieland. Zombieland had a lot of funny stuff in
Zombieland
it.
Zombieland.
You know, that was great.
Good,
I think that was, Yeah.
But I guess it was dark comedy rather than, you know, it wasn't played for. I mean, maybe that's one of the few exceptions to the rule. You know, it was, great. I mean, hopefully the sequel will actually bear fruit. They've been on about a sequel for years, but hopefully they'll do one. But anywho, right? Okay, what I want to do now? I mean, this is something we're going to inflict on our guests and moving forward. But I'm going to practice it on you. So what we're going to do is called 11 questions, because wait for it, there's 11 questions. Quick fire questions, single word answers if you want, except for the last one. I need a little jingle. There's a little intro jingle. I'm going to make a note of that. Jingle.
Okay.
You know, I need to make one, don't I? So, probably with Donald Trump in it somewhere. Okay. Are we ready? Hopefully Bonnie doesn't mind holding on for a minute or two while we do this. We will get to you shortly, Bonnie, I promise. Right. Are you ready?
Sure.
Christina, are you ready?
Hopefully.
Okay.
Yeah,
here we go. Right. What's your guilty pleasure?
Baseball. Is that a guilty pleasure, or is that just a pleasure? I don't know. I love baseball. Okay.
Fine. That's fine. Okay. Baked beans, ranch style, or pork and beans?
Gross. I guess pork and beans. What is ranch style? I don't even know what that means.
I don't. It just says it on the tin. I haven't got a clue. I don't know what they put in there. Bacon, I think. Puppies or kittens?
Puppies.
What's your favorite lunch meat?
A weird question. Roast beef, I guess. Roast beef is good. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll go there.
What was your first car?
Oh, God. It was a convertible. It was something old. I have no clue. It was like red. I don't remember what it was, though.
It was red.
It was a Chrysler. Again, Chrysler something, maybe. I don't know. I have no clue.
Don't want to be accused of being overly sexist, but typical woman answer that. It was red. Well done. We may get a letter after that one. What do you fear most, snakes or spiders?
Spiders. I used to have a snake or two, so they don't scare me at all, but spiders are awful,
cool.
awful creatures.
Okay, Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Oh, God, can I say Michael Myers? Do
no.
I have to pick one of those three? Okay, Freddy.
Yes,
Freddy.
You do. No, just play the game, for goodness sake.
I'm horrible at this game.
Yes, you are. Okay, your first draft, handwritten or word processor?
Word processor, yeah. My handwriting.
Favorite alcoholic drink?
Wine.
Yeah, I could have answered that one for you, couldn't I?
Yeah.
And give us one interesting non-writing related fact about you.
I love classical music. Is that good?
Yeah, that's fine. That's good. There you go. You don't win anything. I'm going to do the gong again. So there you go. So yeah, you've won nothing, but no, well done. There we go. So I think that's that could be a fun thing to do. I think.
Yeah.
So anywho, we have our next guest, Body Caps, erotic horror. A book is called Snuffed, which is Snuff sequel, which sounds. Absolutely right up my street, so I'm looking forward to this. Again, pray to the AT&T gods. Bonnie, are you there?
I am.
Yay!
That pause gets me every time. Oh, she's not there. She's gone. Or the AT&T have dropped the line again, you know. So good to hear you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, more than welcome. How are you this evening?
I'm doing fantastic, trying to stay warm. It's actually cold in Texas, so like we don't know what to do with ourselves at all.
So whereabouts are you calling from? Sorry, I missed that.
Texas.
Oh, whereabouts?
It's southern Texas, near Houston. So I'm
you're joking.
Gulf. Seriously, yeah.
I'm actually in Northwest. I'm at Spring Cypress, Northwest Houston, as we speak.
No way!
Yeah.
It's a small world.
Yeah, so where are you? Was it down near Galveston or?
No, I'm actually. Well, I don't want to say exactly, but I'm.
Oh
I'm
no, it's
of,
fine.
Yeah. You know, towards Galveston and. Kind of between Galveston and Houston is where I'm located.
Wow, you're probably not that far. We should we'll do coffee sometime.
We should do a coffee sometime. I agree.
We will do that definitely. Yeah. But yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Yes. It is a bit of a cold one tonight. It's been a miserable day. We had a bit of rain and even my dogs. I mean, they love going out. You open the door and they look like, nah, we're just going to shit in the dining room. We're not
yeah.
going out in that.
We're
not
used to
that.
This stuff down here. Whenever it's cold like this, we don't know what to do. You know, it's just, ugh.
Yeah.
I lived in Texas from, I think I was like 5 till like 12. And I was in around the same area, too. I remember we went to Galveston all the time. But in all that time that we lived there, I remember a trace of snow one time. And that was it. And, you know, school was closed and stores were closed. So,
The last time that I remember it snowing here, it was 2004 because it was my son's first Christmas, and it snowed on Christmas. It was insane, and it was there was so much snow, and nobody knew what to do, and so you know people were like driving in it and dying, and it was really sad.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people just down here should just stay off the road in those conditions because we don't know what to do.
I know it's literally the same way. I mean, it rains here. I mean, we had a bit of bad rain a few nights ago. You know, and the roads are not, you know, the sewer system, the drainage system, sort of overloads so quickly.
Oh yeah,
it was early last year. We had, I mean, you know, we had all the flooding. I remember it was about February, March time, stood at my front door at 3 a.m, watching the water rise about, well, 5 or 6 foot in the middle of the street and literally creeping up towards my house. It was, luckily it stopped just short of the house, but it was, but yeah, snow. The only snow we saw was they opened a pet grooming place in the strip mall near us, and they got a snow machine. And we cut through the car park. I mean, I was with my little girl. I was like, "What is?" And we literally got out and played in it because she'd never seen snow. She'd been here since she was one. She saw snow just before we moved out, but she doesn't remember it. So we had 10 minutes playing, throwing snowballs at each other and making a little snowman. It was great. But that's it. That's the only snow we've seen in 6.5 years.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often here. We do deal with a lot of, you know, torrential, you know, rain and stuff like that. But flooding, you know, all that jazz.
I've seen plenty of that, yes.
Really, really hot summers. We've got those.
Well, I mean,
cold and hot, though. I would.
I mean, do you know, I've not got used to it. I mean, obviously coming from England, I mean, anything higher than 73 in England is a heat wave. Here, they've got the hats and coats on. I mean, I take the kids to the bus stop, you know, to get for the school bus, and we're in shorts and T-shirt, and they're bundled up, hats and scarves.
Yeah.
And so, aren't you cold? Yeah. Well, no, it's like 75. This would be a sitting on the beach day where I'm from, seriously.
Yeah,
you know, if it gets to 80, people are dying, you know, in England. So I'm just not used to it.
I just bitch either way. Like, if it's cold, I bitch about it. And if it's hot, I bitch about it. Unless it's, like, in the 70s, you know, mid-70s, and it's all, you know, beautiful outside and sunny. I mean, other than that, I'm just not happy. And that never happens down here, so.
Yeah, I mean, you must have some British gene. I mean, the Brits, I mean, we're known for, I mean, we talk about the weather. You get any two British people together at any one time, they will talk about the weather. And it's like, oh, it's too cold, it's too cold, it's free, oh, I'll be glad we're in summer. Oh, isn't it hot? Oh, it's too hot now. Oh, can't stand, I can't wait for a week. Literally, whatever it is, you know, it's too hot, it's too cold, it's too wet, it's too dry.
Exactly.
It's like queuing. I mean, it's something that us British, queuing, apologising for things. We do it incredibly well. You know,
right.
If suddenly we didn't have the weather, we'd have nothing to talk about. So Bonnie, you snuffed sequel. This is erotic. You do erotic horror. I mean, I'm sort of intrigued by the title. I mean, I can sort of imagine how it's going to go. But tell us more about it.
You know, I hate the term erotic horror. I have to mark it that way because there's, you know, erotic elements. But I try to write, mostly what I write is horror, you know, and I like extreme horror and torture and all of that stuff in my books. So they get pretty gritty. And in the Snuff series, basically the story is about a girl named Sophia. It starts out when she's 16 years old and she's a competitive figure skater. And her mother and her father both came from Russia. They were immigrants and came to the United States. Her father passed away whenever she was younger, so she was raised by her mother. But her mother died suddenly, and it was her mother's wish that Sophia go to Russia to discover her roots and this and that. And so Sophia goes. And whenever she does, she gets abducted by the Vavilov Bratva, which is basically the Russian mafia, or a branch of it. And they basically deal in organ trade and, you know, the black market. They do snuff films and stuff like that. That's actually where they make most of their money. And so my villain is Dmitry Vavilov. And so it's kind of from both of their perspectives, and then I also have a third perspective in there. So that's pretty much the gist of it, and she's got to kind of survive in this world that she really doesn't belong in, and she starts finding out things about her own family that are shocking. So I'll leave it at that.
That's some pretty heavy topics in there. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Yeah,
and
dark.
So, as you say, it's more as a horror with erotic elements rather than erotic horror. Yeah, I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've kind of forced to slot our work into the titles, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, you go stick it in the pigeonhole, which is a shame, but you know, it's good that because I've read some erotic horror and it some of it sits uneasy. You know, it doesn't. I guess it's like comedy and horror. You know, it doesn't always work awfully well.
My Yeah, and it's one of my biggest dreams since I was a kid was to be a writer, and my biggest goal was to be a horror writer. That was always a dream of mine. So whenever it gets clumped with erotica, you kind of get clumped into the erotica world.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And it's actually something that I'm trying to get away from as a writer. So I'm finishing up my Snuff series, and then I'm focusing primarily on horror. And that's going to be my main focus from here on out.
Oh, sorry. That is something that I was wondering too, because I had, a friend of mine on Facebook. I was asking recommendations on what to read, and she's like, "You really have to read, have Bonnie Capps on your show." And she's mentioned a couple of your books, so I went to Amazon and I one click Snuff, and I was actually going to read it before we had you on, but I'm just terribly slow, and I haven't read in decades. But anyway. But I thought it was more along the lines of, I don't want to toss out any names, but the definitely the romance, with a dark element or something. But
definitely, yeah.
Yeah, but I love the, it's just darker. I mean, I love that. I mean, this isn't, the girl falls in love with her captor or anything like that. So that's definitely awesome. I can't wait to start reading now.
Yeah, and see, I don't like stories like that. I've written.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of had to take a little break there for a while because I had some personal stuff going on, and I had to take a break from my Snuff series. I'm just now finishing the rest of it. But I mean, I wrote my Killer series first, and every single one of them in the Killer series, none of them are redeemable. But I think that if you're dealing with these guys and they supposedly are psychopaths or sociopaths, the thing about people like that is they don't change. Nothing can change them. That is part of their DNA. It's what makes them tick.
Right.
And so, I don't ever want to change that. And so that's always been a goal of mine, is to never, have
he
the
falls
whole...
in love with her, so he, becomes a good person. No, that doesn't happen. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Now,
and I love
read?
Killing characters, I really do.
Do you?
I love it. It's so fun. No,
that's
usually,
a perk of the job, though,
horror.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's awesome. It's a great stress reliever, it really is. But I read a lot of horror. I have some friends of mine that write horror that I read. In the indie world, to name a few, I would say Tim Miller, Sean Hupp. I'm trying to name my buddies. Hold on one second, because I do read them. I'm trying to throw their names out there. But I love Stephen King, Clive Barker.
Oh, yeah.
I love horror, but I love dark erotica. But I tend to stay away from it because anything that I write, I try to stay away from that genre because I feel it's going to leak out onto what I'm writing.
Right, right, definitely.
And so it sucks, too, because if I'm really into, writing a series, like the Snuff series has been, I'll go forever without reading, and it's miserable. So I have to take a break and just, put the writing down for a little bit so I can focus on reading.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And I love both of them. I love to write. I love to read. But it's like I can't ever do, both at the same time. So something is always suffering, it seems like.
Exactly.
But,
it's miserable.
Yeah. What's your favorite Stephen King book?
The Shining.
Is it?
Hands down. Hands down is always one of my favorites.
Honestly
what got me into horror was I actually watched The Shining whenever I was a kid and fell in love. So obviously had to read the book, and then I fell in love with the book. And so nothing can hold a candle to that for me, because that was kind of like my introduction to horror.
I started out slowly, you know, when I was probably 11, 12-ish, and, you know, I had, like, the Christopher Pike phase, and then I went into, like, a John Saul phase, and I think that was all before I hit, like, Stephen King and stuff like that, but let's see, my favorite Stephen King, I always say I love Gerald Game. I mean, to me, that was, I just the whole idea. Did you read that one, Gerald's Game?
No, I actually haven't read that one.
I read it on Xtina's recommendation, because it didn't strike me, you know, I will judge a book by its cover. It didn't strike me as the sort of Stephen King. But I read it relatively recently, actually, and it absolutely grabbed me.
I mean,
my ultimate favorite King book is It. But obviously, it's got a monster and et cetera, et cetera. But with Gerald's Game, I mean, the horror was in the woman's head. I mean, it was the circumstance she found herself, but the unpleasantness of the really got you was in her head. And I think that's really what grabbed me. I really enjoyed that. It was good.
Yeah,
thank you for the recommendation.
Of course. And I still have to read It. I keep hearing from everybody.
Yes, you have. You have to.
It's good stuff.
Before the remade movie comes out, you've got to read the book.
I haven't even seen the movie.
I don't even know how I feel about the remake. I really don't. I'm kind of just... I'm at odds with it. I guess I just have to see it to see if it's... I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. But I mean, horror remakes of apart with I think with the exception of the Rob Zombie Halloween have been terrible, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm thinking The Thing, the Poltergeist remake was just awful. I'm sorry.
I haven't even watched it yet. I don't think I want to. It was terrible.
All I wanted to do all the way through it was switch it off and watch the original again just to clear my brain, you know.
I think it was the same way. Bad.
See, they just should stop. They shouldn't do that anymore. I mean, leave classics alone. That's my opinion. But then I always want to check out whenever the remakes, you know, every time that they come out, I'm like, is it good? So it's kind of like, you know.
Well, I think you kind of feel because we love, I think as I said earlier, you know, when we were talking to P, you know, the Howling, for me, one of my favorite horror films, certainly my favorite werewolf film. You know, part of me would like to see that remake. Obviously, the effects haven't, I mean, some of the effects have weathered incredibly well, but some haven't, you know, to see it. But they would need to make it pretty much frame by frame, but with modern effects, really. They start deviating and, you know, adding their own spit, and it just, you know, it's such a perfect story, start to finish, you know, to mess with it.
Didn't they pretty much do that with the remake of Psycho? I mean, that was every frame was the same.
No, they did. They shot it literally shot by shot. They deliberately did that, and it was I think I managed about half an hour of that. I mean, Vince Vaughn, I'm sorry, he was Anthony Perkins, but it just didn't work. It was appalling. I'm sorry, I hated it.
No, I feel the same way, because I just thought, what is the sense? I mean, everything looks the same except you have different actors, and why even bother?
And it was in color.
Just watch.
It was in color, but look at the Evil Dead remake. I mean, they even got Sam Raimi to direct it. And it was like they'd taken the original and just ripped its soul out, because the original had that thick vein of dark humor running through it. The remake just didn't. I mean, it was pretty much frame by frame, almost same idea, same monster, but it just seemed flat, you know. And I sat through it because I'm a Yorkshireman, you know. If I paid to see something, you know, if I invested to watch something, then, you know, I'll usually stick it out. But it was. Now, leave the classics alone. So, I mean, imagine if you try to remake Jaws. I mean, that would just be, you know, that would be bad before they even started. I mean, just,
well, that's the beauty of them, though, is they are old and they're classics, and that's what makes them amazing. And the fact that whenever they were made, that they, that, you know, the cast and crew did such an incredible job that they did at the time.
Yeah. Well,
and
even the
I mean, that
I
just
makes
you left alone.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Jaws recently because my daughter wanted to see it. I mean, she's into sharks at the moment. I love shark films. And I mean, she enjoyed it. And the fact that, I mean, the shark itself is a big rubber shark. You know it's a big rubber shark. But it is shot so well. It doesn't matter. You know, some of the best scenes are when you don't see the shark, you know, and the bits when you see it, your brain sort of skips it. Yeah, it looks plastic, fine. But it was so incredibly well done. I mean, to try and imagine trying to recreate that and then use CGI sharks and whatnot, it would just be awful.
And Jaws is the reason that I'm still terrified of sharks to this day. I can't even look at them on the TV because of Jaws.
Oh, really? That's a healthy fear.
I actually watch,
you know.
Not a lot of things scare me. I can watch any type of horror, you know, like anything. But sharks, oh my God. I watched The Shallows. And I watched it with my kids, and they were laughing at me. Because my kids are little horror buffs. You know, they took out, especially my oldest son, Mitch. I mean, he will sit there and watch the classics with me. You know, he'll watch anything with me horror-related. He was dying laughing because we were watching The Shallows, and I was screaming my head off. Because that's one thing that terrifies me. I'm like, yeah, that scares the shit out of me. It does.
You know, I see that meme every so often. There's this meme on Facebook, and it shows people on these little dinghy, you know, things in the water, and it has the big screen. It says, would you watch Jaws like this? And I so would.
Oh,
I
no.
would. I mean, I don't think sharks really not, you know, big spiders falling from the sky, you know, I would be petrified and die. But sharks, I was just like, just don't go in the water. What's the big deal? I mean, I didn't get
that's
it.
Just get out of the water. I mean, end of problem, really, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't go into it, and I just don't like seeing them at all. If I can just avoid sharks at any given, I mean, I just... Be grateful. I hate it whenever I'm on Facebook or something and a shark pops up and I'm like, ah! It scares me. I mean, whenever I was a little kid, I would look at magazines, right? Of like what were those magazines called? Was it the National Geographic? And it would like have pictures of sharks in it, and I would hurl the magazine across the room because I wouldn't be expecting it.
Okay. Well, Bonnie, I was wanting to know if you had a reading for us. I'm anxious to hear hear more Snuffed.
Yay. I do.
Go for it.
Okay. Hold on, I'm pulling up. I've been working on something, Sophia. I want you to see what it is that has kept my mind calm during your absence. I nod haltingly as he puts the key in the lock before turning it slowly. You did a number on me, Mouse. He removes the key and presses his forehead against the door as his eyes squeeze shut. You took part of me with you, but I was never alone. No, I had them. The air is sucked from my lungs when he pushes the door open and displays something so inhumane, but that is such an understatement. It's sick, beyond sick, abominable. It's evil. Do you like them? He whispers, the warmth of his breath spreading over my shoulder. I shake my head and attempt to back away, but his palm is firmly planted on my lower back. Go on, go say hello. Dimitri, I choke out. What have you done? He ticks his tongue as he turns his amber eyes on me. You don't like them? Such a shame. I've spent hours on each individual piece. How? He asks, his tone soothing to the point it's sickening. It's simple, really. You must remove the brain and entrails before treating the skin, otherwise they would decompose. But they're human, and I stutter, my wide eyes finding his. Part beast, he finishes for me, pushing me into the room and closing the door behind us. They're different, abnormal. That's what makes them beautiful. That's what makes them art. A raspy breath tumbles from my lips when my eyes travel to each piece, his idea of art. Tears rise and sit in the corners of my eyes as I try and make sense of Dimitri's obsession for the macabre. But it goes so much deeper than that. This is his madness in the flesh, literally, and once again, I cannot escape it. The piece that I cannot peel my eyes away from, though, it's a bird, and its head is missing. Instead, it's the head of a girl, a young woman. Her eyes are missing. The ones that have replaced them, they're made of glass, soulless, just like Dimitri. Lacking of life, compassion, empathy, love. It's frightening, yet amidst the terror, I also begin to understand. He had them, these creatures with glass eyes. The dead that can't see him for what he is. What is he, though? A monster, yes, but even more an enigma. A misunderstood man. A man that is cruel, a man that is empty. These things, these pieces, they represent his insanity. And just like some cut deep to feel, he makes them as a form of escapism. They're a crutch, just like me. My eyes travel to another. This one actually has a fishtail and human abdomen attached. I notice that it isn't preserved like the others. It's rotting, and the smell soon hits my nose. I hold my forearm in front of my face, blinking and allowing the tears to stream down my cheeks when I turn and face my husband. I understand, I whisper, finding every moralistic thought that tries to trump my determination. I have to pretend. My daughters and my life depends on it. I watch his lips curl up in that exact evil smirk that I've come to know too well. I pleased him. I didn't judge him. Acceptance, he craves it like a bear craves the warmth of a cave during a long winter. He needs me to be his solace, and I will oblige. If it means that I can keep Eva and I alive, there isn't any use in fighting anymore. That will be our undoing. Obliging, that will keep us alive, and damn it, I want to kiss the dirt of America before this is all said and done. Mouse, he whispers, stepping closer. You are my all, and you complete me. I see the light in your eyes. Right now, you see what I see. I nod, running an arm across my tear-soaked cheeks. You're right, I murmur, stepping towards him and placing my hands over his cheeks, choking back bile as a result of the stench in the room. I was stupid, I whisper, crushing my chest against his. I want to be a family, you, me, and Eva. His jaw tenses at the mention of her name, and I brush my lips against his. His love is like a storm, unrelenting, cold, and callous. I can never please him fully. There will always be mistakes that pour from my lips or actions that I would think nothing of otherwise. He's calculating and it's chilling. He watches me like a hawk, his keen ears picking up my every breath and every word. Please, I whisper, my lips barely touching his. So close to begging, so far from freedom. We linger for seconds, staring into each other's eyes as I try my best to ignore the horror that surrounds me while I stand before the demon that controls me. In a flash, his hand wraps in my hair, pulling my head back and pressing his lips to mine. Pulling away, his eyes find mine, his irises swell with morbid curiosity. As much as I am trying to figure him out, he is doing the same with me. We are two beings seemingly attempting to fit into a mold in which we do not belong, his being normalcy and mine being the deadly world that I have no business being a part of. My fascination with him isn't warranted, and my feelings for him are nothing short of hatred. Yet, in order to set foot upon American soil again, that can only be achieved if I force myself into his mold. The same cannot be said for him. He will never be normal, nor will he ever attempt to be. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but nothing will change my circumstances. I'm here, and so is Eva. We solely exist in Dimitri's sick world. You do not understand, Mouse, he murmurs against my lips, but you will. I run my hands over his shoulders as I brush my nose against his. Then show me how to understand. My eyes grow wide when he scoffs and pushes away from me. I have shown you, Sophia. I've shown you so many times. I lick my lips as I stare up into his eyes. I know, I whisper, stepping towards him and reaching out hesitantly. His chest tightens when I place my hands on him. Take me, reclaim what is yours. I will never betray you again. His jaw tenses at my words, and when he places his hands over mine, I expect him to remove my touch, but he doesn't. Instead, he squeezes my fingers in his massive hands, causing my heart to thunder beneath my ribs as a raspy breath escapes his lips. Help me, he says quietly, and my eyes travel over his shoulder to the reminders that stare at us from every angle with marble eyes. In order to understand, he grasps my hand and pulls it to his lips before kissing each of my fingers. Then these hands cannot stay clean.
I'm hanging on every word and then stop reading and
get us hooked in and then stop. No, that's awesome. Thank you. Brilliant.
Thank you.
I can't wait to actually start reading the, you know, I one-clicked as soon as my friend was like, you know, you have to check her out. And I saw the books, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait. So, yeah, where can we find you online? Where can we find your stuff besides, like, Amazon?
Really, it's, well, I removed all of my books from KU, so they're actually about to go up on Smashwords and Barnes & Noble and all that jazz, as long as they let me have my books up there on those sites. So, yeah, I'm going to be updating that on my page, on my Bonnie Capps author page, so.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, I thank you so much for coming on the show, and will you come back and see us?
Definitely.
Yay!
A
all right.
It's been a great pleasure, Bonnie. Yeah, we'll have a, I promise we'll have a coffee. There's a few Starbucks around Houston. I'm sure we can pick one.
Oh, yeah, that sounds incredible. You definitely need to have a coffee.
I'm sorry, I was just chatting online with Lisa, who is the head of the Houston Hospitalizers Association. If you're interested, I'm having some technical issues
on my end. I'm having a hard time hearing over here.
Oh, I'm sorry, he's
digitizing really bad. I can't hear him too well either. So.
Okay, let's say we'll start with coffee then.
It sounds kind of creepy. Maybe you can.
Yeah, it does.
It's kind of ghost based from Scream. You know, I was just mentioning Scream earlier today. Well, you know, it's a good time it ended. You know, we only have a few minutes left, and we got our, like, ending song and everything. So, again, I want to thank you very much for agreeing to come on the show, and I would definitely be stalking you on Facebook and, you know, stalking you until you say you'll come back on. And so...
Definitely. Y'all can help me anytime.
Thank you very much, Bonnie.
Thank y'all. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
You sound so creepy, James.
I'm very sorry. Say goodbye to Christina, and then we'll go.
Goodbye, Christina.
Well, Bebop Luna, she's my baby. Bebop Luna, I don't mean my baby. Bebop Luna, she's my baby. Bebop Luna, I don't mean my baby. Bebop Luna, she's my baby, my baby, my baby, my baby. Well, she's the girl in the red, blue jeans. She's the queen. For all the teens, she's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say, Bebop Luna, she's my baby. Bebop Luna, I don't miss my baby. Bebop Luna, she's my baby, my baby, my baby. That's why. Let's rock again now. Well, Baby, I'm a baby.